This is my financial declaration in the interest of being completely open, because personally I don't exempt government agencies from potentially creating conflicts of interest, and that's one of the topics I would like to mention, or universities for that matter, because both government agencies and universities can have very close ties with corporations that have essential profit interests. I'm going to talk about industrial animal production in North Carolina, and I start out with this to say that this is for those of you who may not know about this topic. We don't produce pigs like this in this way for the most part anymore, although these are recent pictures. We produce them like this, and so this is an acronym that I want you to remember. CAFO is confined animal feeding operations, or concentrated animal feeding operations. So this is how most of our meat is produced today. So they don't live like they used to. The animals are grown in these confinement buildings. The waste goes through slats in the floor. It's flushed out into these open pits that the industry calls lagoons. The feeders are automatic. The lagoons fill up and the waste is sprayed on fields nearby. So here you see the feeders, the automated feeders, and the waste coming into the open pit. And here's what happens after it's been in the lagoon for a little while. It's sprayed out. So here's another picture taken about 2 years ago. That also shows how they manage the carcasses, which can really develop quite a distinctive odor when they are left like that. What I want you to notice here is that there are many of these open cesspools, and there are people living nearby, right in the top of the picture. It's very well known that the workers suffer from a number of respiratory diseases and lung function deficits, but also the neighbors experience these pollutants. So you can see that these livestock facilities are spraying waste in the fields between the buildings and the homes. This is a photograph that we got from one of the neighbors we worked with. This is her lawn tractor in the foreground and the fence around her yard, and that is feces and urine being sprayed out across the road from her home. And sometimes the wind actually blows from that field towards her home. So I was approached by, before I get into that part of the story, let me also note, I thought this was appropriate given this week's events in the Northeast. North Carolina is also affected by tropical storms. This occurred in 1999. Hurricane Floyd left the eastern part of North Carolina devastated by floods, and a lot of the fecal waste was washed down into the rivers, but also into local communities. So this is another part of, another consequence of this industry. So the industry has grown very rapidly. They're not, the red dots here are swine CAFOs. The green dots are poultry CAFOs. A lot of the green dots you can't see because they're covered by red dots in the east. And the eastern part of the state where the swine CAFOs are located is particularly low income, historically African American population. So this is clearly an environmental injustice. It's been demonstrated through analyses of government data. So I met people in communities affected by pollutants from this industry, and we began to construct health studies around this topic. And over the last 12 years or so, we've conducted a number of surveys. We've looked at asthma in school children. We've looked at symptoms of people who live near these operations compared to other areas. We've made measurements of the pollutants in the neighborhood and shown that as they vary, as the pollutant levels go up, respiratory symptoms, mood disorders, and even their blood pressure levels increase as the measured pollutant levels go up compared to when they're down. But when I first got involved in this, I worked with a group of us worked with the State Health Department, which had become concerned about this issue. And we did a survey that was funded in part by the Health Department. And when it was released, it showed that people living near a swine CAFO had excesses of a number of respiratory symptoms and severe impacts on their quality of life from the situation, or compared to, literally, people who lived in other areas where there is either no livestock or other types of livestock. The day that the State Health Department released the study, a global law firm for the North Carolina Pork Council sent us a letter saying that they wanted all the names and addresses of people in the study, and that we had potentially libeled the industry, and they were notifying us of this. They also sent the letter to the chancellor's office at my university and to the State Health Department. My heart rate definitely went up when I read this. I really didn't expect this, but I think it was mainly because I was naive. We're not so naive anymore. But what really was the problem is that my university told me that I would not be able to withhold the identifying information about these people. And I thought, that's impossible, because I was working under an agreement with the Institutional Review Board that we would promise people confidentiality. It was the university's board. The university works under an arrangement with the National Institutes of Health that we have such a board that approves research and protects people. And I also knew that these people live in areas where the industry is very powerful. They're on county commissioners and sheriff's departments. They're at banks. They're in agriculture boards. They control work. People could be threatened. We had met people who were threatened with violence and not just job loss by this industry. And, of course, I knew that if I released this information, that I would never be able to work in these areas again. So I ended up having to get a lawyer and fight with my university, and we did release the data, and I do believe that they have the right to see if we made mistakes. So they should be able to conduct a reanalysis, but that should be done without any ability to disclose the people who were in the study. And that was not what they were looking for. So eventually we gave over redacted data, but it was really a huge problem for us. It took months to deal with this legal situation. And I think they achieved their goals. And it came home to me when I found out from a faculty member at another North Carolina public university that she had stopped her research into impacts of the industrial swine production on neighbors because she didn't have tenure and she was worried that she would not be able to keep her job. So this is an example of, suppression or... maybe not so much suppression is that they were putting us on notice that we should not mess with them. And furthermore, I found out why would the University of North Carolina fail to protect us? I found out that an executive from the biggest pork producer in the state was on the Board of Governors. The university attorney was a close friend with the attorney who signed the letter to me. So, you know, this is a system, and they're represented in the state legislature. At the time, there was a U.S. senator who was a pork producer. So these industries have a lot of clout. And It's interesting in some ways that people at state universities may be more susceptible to corporate influence than people at private universities, because the state universities have budgets that are voted on by legislatures that are elected with campaign funds from corporations. I'll just mention briefly, I had another experience with an agricultural issue that was different, but not unrelated. Subsequently, we started research on the land application of the solids, the sewage sludge, treated sewage sludge that comes from wastewater treatment plants. So cities around the country produce large amounts of sewage. They have to do something with the solids because the EPA requires that the water be cleaned before it's returned to a river or a lake. These solids are a problem. It's expensive to put them in a landfill or to incinerate them, and that's not really a good way to do it. Most of it's spread on fields, a lot of it near people's homes. So we had heard from people who said that it was making them sick and it was contaminating the waterways around their homes. When we got, one of them asked us to apply for a grant with the Water Environment Research Federation. So we did. And this is an industry trade association. And to make a long story short, when we got the contract that we were asked to sign, it stipulated that we would not be able to publish our findings unless they gave approval. And they would take whatever we reported and they would publish it if they felt like it. And they would furthermore charge money to the public. Now, I thought this was completely unacceptable for a public university to be entering into an arrangement like this. And I was happy that a UNC official agreed with me and initially sought to protect us. Subsequently, however, we learned that the actual money that they were going to give us was coming from the United States Environmental Protection Agency. So it was a pass-through, a way to keep research from becoming public. And UNC then changed their contract negotiator, and I was told, well, we can take the money if you want to go ahead with the research. And eventually we made an agreement. It took getting the lawyers involved again so that we could publish without their permission. But these are the kinds of tactics that are routinely used, and it's happening in agriculture all over the place. Earlier this month, this article appeared in the Raleigh News and Observer. Prestige Farms is one of the biggest pork and poultry producers in the state. They've just given $10 million to North Carolina State University. And I don't think they have to tell people what to find or what kind of science to do. I think we know that if we're going to keep getting this money, we'll do what's good for them. I show you, this is the title of an article that appeared in a journal called Public Understanding of Science, written by a professor of mass communication, Holly Stocking, and her colleague. And I want you to notice that manufacturing doubt is something that Elena talked about. Controversy is good, because then people aren't sure. So it's not only good for researchers who want to be able to say more research is necessary, gee, could I have another grant? It's good for journalists, and it's part of what journalists do when they report scientific research. What Stocking's position is that this kind of use of, well, they said and the other side is this in journalism, and sometimes in science, I would argue, basically promotes ignorance. Because why should we have to argue that it's bad to have fecal waste sprayed on your home? That's really not, I mean, that doesn't make sense. And I'm in some ways embarrassed that I've spent years conducting formal research, making measurements of pollutants and people's health because they're exposed to fecal waste. I mean, that's, even in the 19th century, they knew that, and we're in the 21st century. On the topic of solutions, I want to leave you with some recent documents that I think are very helpful, may offer some possibilities for us. The American Association of University Professors has a new document, Principles and Practices to Guide Industry Academic Partnerships. Food and Water Watch, an organization in that I guess it's national, has Public Research, Private Gain, Corporate Influence Over University Agricultural Research, excellent document. And then the International Society for Environmental Epidemiology has a new set of guidelines for ethics guidelines for environmental epidemiologists that I think is very useful and might be of interest to those of you who would be interested in trying to affect the American Public Health Association's position on these matters. So before I stop, I want to acknowledge my research colleague and community partner, Naima Muhammad. If you can just raise your hand or something. She's worked with me on a lot of this research and helped guide me in this, and I want to thank Naima and the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network. So maybe one or two comments or questions at this time, and then we'll move on. Yes, in the back, and then here. Yes, here. Right. So we have a situation now where many states are cutting back on their university budgets, and so increasingly students don't have support, they need support. So if we don't have public funding of higher education, we're increasingly in trouble on this count. I can say that in my department, we have funding from the pharmaceutical industry that provides stipends for students that are higher than any of the other funding streams. So it becomes not only an incentive, a way to keep people who don't have funding out, but for the people who do get into graduate school, they, if you want to make more money, you know, work for the drug company. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, there was one point here first.
I was just
I'm still working on issues with CAFOs and with sewage sludge. I also work on topics related to radiation in the nuclear industry and kind of general environmental justice topics. I don't know why I still have my job, but so I think, can we hold it for the end? Because we will definitely have some good time for a discussion at the end. And next, I'd like to introduce Tyrone Hayes from UC Berkeley.